But I'd like to start with just a little bit of an introduction. I think it's only fair for y'all to know kind of where I'm coming from. I like, when I hear someone speak on anything, really, I like to know, if I don't know the person, I want to know a little bit about them so I know where they're coming from. So I grew up in East Tennessee in the Greenville congregation there, if you know anyone from there. And at age 10, our family went to Kenya, Africa to do mission work. So we were there for 4 years, 10 years old, 14 years old, and came home from that. And a couple of years later, we moved here to this congregation, or to this community. That was 2010. And as far as, so as far as work-wise, I have varying levels of experience, so I'm not here as some financial expert, per se, but I've had some experience, and I know what it's like to work for someone. I know what it's like to manage someone else's business, and I also know what it's like to be an owner of a business. And so I've been all three of those, and I have learned a lot of things in the last number of years. I am 33. I still think I'm fairly young. But in the last number of years, I have learned a lot. We had, growing up, we had a store, bulk food store, what you would normally call that. And so at a very young age, I was very involved with our business and just kind of grew up around business. And I wasn't necessarily like sat down as a child or an adolescent and said, hey, here are some financial principles for your life. I didn't realize until later how much I actually learned by observing and just simply doing business and having a good dad and good parents that taught me good financial principles. And I'll tell you, this week we're sticking with the basics, and my goal of this week is that you would at least have the basics and the principles to go out into life. You don't need to know all the technicalities of business and things in order to be successful. You just need some good basic principles. And I'm amazed how many times, even now, I hear people, even maybe my age and older, who say, I was never taught, no one ever taught me good finances. No one ever taught me how to manage money well. Maybe you're here and maybe your dad is not a good financial manager. I am glad that I don't, other than those that live here, I don't know really your households, your where you came from. But most likely there's someone here that grew up in a household where maybe the finances were a little dysfunctional. And so I hope that this week you have something to take with you. We'd like to be really practical and see what we can learn. So that's a little bit of an introduction. And the title says, or it talks about living in an age of excess, and we do. And if I was talking to 30-year-olds or other people my age, I'd know exactly where they're at. But for you, you probably don't have just a lot of excess right now. Maybe you do. Maybe some of you do. I don't know. But here in the next couple of years, most likely, you are going to get married, have a family, and buying property right now is actually really difficult. So that is one thing that I hear, is that it's difficult to buy property. And so it feels a little bit like talking to you all week about what to do with our excess. Maybe it's not something that you're just really dealing with right now, maybe later. So we'd like to get into kind of a combination of those things. All right. There is, first of all here, this is the outline. I think y'all got that. There is a verse in Luke 12:15 that I want this to be our theme verse for the whole week. In Luke 12:13-15, and this to me sounds just like a present day financial podcast where someone calls in, a little bit like the Dave Ramsey podcast. Have any of you listened to the Dave Ramsey podcast? I want to know my audience here. Okay. All right. A few over here. I won't ask who doesn't know who Dave Ramsey is. Okay. So it actually reminds me a lot of this. Someone calls in and they say, hey, we have a problem. We have a relationship problem. We have a money problem. We have I got my brother over here. He refuses to give me part of my inheritance that is due to me. And I think in a normal situation, about any mainstream Christian podcast financial advisor would say, go get an attorney, go get a lawyer, and fight this thing. You deserve your half. All right, what does it say here? And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto him, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And this is something that I have to remind myself over and over again. And in your handout here in your study period, there's a question on there that says, how would you explain this verse to someone who's never read it before? I think sometimes we get so used to these verses and we kind of explain them away. But what does it actually mean? And I'll let you all try to figure this out. What does it actually mean? What does Jesus mean when he says that the things we have do not define us? A man's life consists not in the things which he possesses. So keep that verse in mind as we go on here. So I'd like to lay a foundation for this week. Why are we starting out with comparing where we are on the world stage? We are in an incredibly unusual situation as Americans right now. There's never been a prosperous time like it is now. And there's dangers that go with that. There's a lot of opportunities that go with that as well. So I think it's good to look at that. What do you see here? This to us looks very unusual. This is not something that you would see driving down the road in any of your communities. But this is actually very normal. So according to worldbank.org, there are 700 million people who live in extreme poverty. All right, I want that number to sink in. 700 million doesn't sound like many when you think of the billions that are here. There are approximately 350 million people that live in the United States. So you double the U.S. population, you take L.A., New York City, everything in the United States, you double that, and that is how many people in the world are in extreme poverty. That's an incredible amount. And then we have this. And that's what we're trying to wrestle with here today. We have this. They have this. We have this. Around 3.5 billion people, or 44%, so about half of the population of the world are poor. They live on 6.85 cents per day. I think that's right. Sounds really low. I'll check that to make sure. All right. So as we talk about the disparity of wealth, you look at all the wealth in the world. It's like a certain amount of trillions, a couple hundred trillions of wealth that is in the world. Half of the global population owns 2% of the global wealth, and 10% owns 75%. So you have this very small portion of people who own most of the wealth in the world. And here's a visual for you. 31% of the world's population enjoying their wealth. And look at, so it's about 3% to 97%. So look at those three, these are $5 bills that I found. I just put a bunch of these on there. So there's 100, there's 97 for the rich, there's 3 for the poor. So most of the world has that little bit. And a small population has all that. And if you would take the 31%, if you would take the wealthy, and you could really scrunch that yet, and there's a lot in just the top 1% of even that. So that's a little bit comparing where we are on the world stage. And then I would like to look at this yet. All right. So you probably are not worth $110,000. Okay, Mark and I are. So we all find ourselves in different parts of this. I won't say how far this goes. Okay, so we have top 10%. If you have $110,000, which probably most, if not all of your parents are worth $110,000, if they sold everything they had and you would add up what that is, it would be most likely well beyond $110,000. Probably more between the $300,000 and the $1 million. So you're in the top 10% if you have $110,000. You're in the top 5% if you have $300,000. And what is just shocking to me is that we as Anabaptist people, we actually have quite a few people who are in the top 1% of the wealthiest in the world. So what do we do with that? I'm not here to make you feel guilty. I'm not here to make you feel guilty about where we are. I am just saying with this that we have a responsibility with this. And it goes right into this thing of whether or not we're owners or whether we're stewards. And we'll get into that just a little bit later. Something else that's interesting, in 1920, the square footage on a house was approximately 1,000, and there were 4.4 average in a household. Now, we are over double that in square footage on a house and about half the amount of people in the house. So if you go the square footage of the per person, it's exponentially larger. So our incomes have gone up, lifestyle has gone up, our houses have gotten bigger, we go on more vacations. And I don't know that we have actually seen this really play out yet, because my dad talks about growing up in poverty. According to American standards, it would have been poverty. He talks about there was a visitor that came and broke the commode. I don't know what happened there. But the commode broke, and they had no money to fix a commode, and so the visitor paid to repair the commode. And that's a lot of my parents' generation grew up in that kind of environment. I did not grow up like that. It would probably be more safe to say that I grew up in a more well-to-do household. And probably a lot of you could say the same. And so we haven't really fully seen this play out. And it'll be interesting how the historians will view this present time. All right. So I just put that on there as just another, just comparing. It is so hard for us to imagine this, because I don't go down the road and see this little hut where this little boy lives. I don't see that going down the road, and it's really hard for us to comprehend that. And I've really wondered if I could see it. So if my house was here and my neighbor's house was this, how differently would I live? Let's say there was a bunch of people around me that didn't have food to eat. At what point would I say, I'm done sharing and I'm going to keep my lifestyle the way it is? Or would I give and give and give and my lifestyle starts to drop? And I think sometimes what happens is we don't see these people, and so therefore it doesn't really make us feel it. We get these flyers from CAM, you know, these really pitiful situations, and so we have this feeling of guilt that comes up within us. And so we give more out of guilt instead of an actual heart of wanting to help. Okay, there is, sorry, one more thing here. Talking about living in unprecedented times, did you know that you live better than kings did 200 years ago? You have air conditioning, and you have a car, and you have an airplane. You don't have one, but you can get on one and go on a vacation. A king 200 years ago would have only dreamt of that. And even one small thing, I remember we went to Africa in 2003, and when you had a cell phone in Africa, it was like, wow, you're wealthy. Well, now it's just like the poor people have phones. And so we have these, what used to be luxuries are just becoming more mainstream. Around 1940, about half of U.S. homes had complete indoor plumbing. That is really hard for us to believe. That has not even been 100 years ago, where about half of the U.S. population had indoor plumbing. Okay, I want to go to a passage of Scripture. You may know where I'm going with this. So the context here, you had this city, they had walls all around the city. They were walled off, they couldn't get out because of the enemy. And it was so bad in there, I'm going to read you a couple of verses, it's absolutely horrific. And the king asked her, "What is your trouble?" She answered, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son, that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow.' So we boiled my son and ate him. And on the next day I said to her, 'Give your son that we may eat him.' But she has hidden her son." So I'm just giving you that as this is happening inside the city walls. Okay, so absolutely horrible. There was no food. They were eating their children. And then there were these four lepers. And I was going to read it, but I don't have time. They basically said, "We don't have anything to lose. We're going to die if we stay, and we're going to die if we go out. Let's just go risk it." So these four lepers, they go out to the camp of the enemy, and they were just going to say, "Hey, is there," I think they were going to ask for food. Yeah. "If we say we will enter into the city, then the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. And if we still sit here, we die also. So let's go fall into the hands of the Syrians. If they save us alive, we will live. If they kill us, we will die." Either way, I don't have anything to lose. So these four lepers go out, and they get out there, and they find silver, and they find gold, and they find raiment. And so they're sitting here, enjoying their gold, enjoying their food, and all of a sudden something hit them, and they said, "This is not good. Whatever we're doing is not good." Then they said one to another, "We do not well. This day is a day of good tidings, and we hold our peace. If we tarry till the morning light, some mischief will come upon us. Now therefore come, that we may go and tell the king's household." And I wonder sometimes if we should maybe have a little bit more of this attitude. Instead of indulging ourselves in our time, we are not seeing inside the city wall. We see, and a lot of us, I don't, but a lot of you probably live out in a rural community where your neighbors don't need much, your neighbors are doing just fine, and it's really easy to just kind of get into this selfish lifestyle of just piling things up for ourselves and not seeing the needs around us. And I think it's really important that we educate ourselves and we're aware of what's going on in the world. Know that there's a famine going on in Yemen. Know that there's Christians being killed in Nigeria. Like there's Voice of the Martyrs. There's things you can do. You can subscribe to things here and there where you can educate yourselves on what's going on in the world instead of just having that wall there and acting like nothing is there, because when we know it's there, we have to do something about it. Our response should be thankfulness when we think of all of this. Sharing and giving should be natural responses when we compare ourselves to others in the world. And again, I'm not here trying to make you feel bad. We're going to get more into the practical things of what we can do about this later on in the week. But I'd like to look at the, really define who we should be. Should we be an owner or should we be a steward? And I'm just curious, what do y'all think? Should we be a steward or an owner? You'll know after we're done here. Anyone know?
Steward.
All right. So an owner is someone who owns something. He's got the legal or rightful title to something, one to whom property belongs. A steward is someone who manages another's property or financial affairs, one who administers anything as the agent of another or other. So it's very different. When you are the owner, you have the authority to say what you do with what you own, If you're a steward, and I, like I said earlier, I manage a business for someone else. I was a steward of someone else's business, and so I answered to them for how I managed the business. And we're going to look at some characteristics or actions of an owner versus a steward. So an owner is self-centered. You look out for the well-being of yourself. We're going to have to move pretty quickly here. Covetous, you always want something you don't have. What I have is mine. And I deserve what I have. I worked hard for what I have. I deserve to indulge in a luxury lifestyle, in a lifestyle of ease, whatever you want to call it. I deserve it because I worked hard. Wasteful spending. We were talking a little bit about waste over there in the teacher's room, about being wasteful with what we have and our resources. And someone who's an owner, he can throw away a lot of what he's given because it's his. He's not giving an account for it. Blinded by money. You make decisions based on the dollar. You're going out through life, and your lenses are the dollar. And I wish I had a dollar up here, but if you would just take a dollar and put it over someone's eyes with a rubber band, some people walk around the world like that. They make decisions based on money. We should have principles that go beyond that and values. An owner is someone who complains. He is not thankful for what he has. All right, steward, let's go to the positives here. He is focused on other people. He is content with what he has. A sharing person. He's thankful. I'll leave this up a little bit so if you want to write this down. Frugal with yourself. Now, there are people who are frugal with themselves and frugal with other people. And there are other people who are frugal with themselves and loose with giving, which should be a Christian. Okay? I believe, and I don't know how many times you'll hear me say this in the next 10 days, and this is a really strong statement, but I believe it, that there's no place for tightwads in the kingdom of heaven. If you look at the Gospels and you see the heart of Jesus, there is no place for someone who is not generous towards other people. All right, gonna get off on a bunny trail here if I'm not careful. All right, make sure others have what they need. When you compare those two lists, it's just completely different. So there's the attitudes and characteristics of an owner versus a steward. And hopefully that should be very clear about what we should be. Okay, so how do I have proof that we are to be stewards? So why in the world would Jesus say this? Well, I'll just read a little bit here. This is on judgment. Then he said unto them, we'll start in the second verse there, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, you gave me no food. I was thirsty, you didn't give me a drink. I was a stranger, you didn't take me in. Naked, you didn't clothe me. Sick, you didn't visit me." And then they'll say, "Lord, when did we see you like this?" Then shall he answer them, saying, "Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not unto the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal." So what's happening here? There is an account being given for what they did with the resources that they had. So in order to give clothes to a person, you have to go out and you have to spend some money and you have to buy clothes. Or you give them the clothes out of your own closet. It's resources that we are giving an account for and our actions of what we do with those resources. And so if you look through the New Testament, you will see even the parables, the parable of the steward. And it is very, very clear that I am a steward. And we should all have that in our minds as we go through the next 10 days here. I am a steward. I am not an owner of what I have. And it will affect the way you live, whether or not you look at what you have as purely yours or managing it for Christ. We're going to do something a little different here. I figured this in our time. I think it's going to take us about 15 minutes. 5, 10, 15. We're going to do an exercise. And what I have here is yellow note cards, blue note cards, and red note cards. And about 8.7, this is a survey that was done, about 8.7% of U.S. households made $150,000 or more per year. That's going to be a reflection of, actually, I'll go here. That might be a little easier to visualize. So 8.7% made, I'll jump back and forth, $150,000 or more. That's the blue card. And then 66.3% make $25,000 to $150,000 per year. That's a really wide variation. You would definitely call that the middle class. So there's more of those than anyone else. However, there's a pretty good chunk of red, which is 25% of households make less than $25,000 per year. Now, $25,000 per year for a household is poverty. So we're talking about poverty here in the U.S., which is a little hard to believe. But I don't know why, but it almost seems like God constantly has at least one person in my life that is in the red that needs help. And I will tell you that it's very difficult to help these people. There is a way. And I actually have a story on your, just very brief, I could give you so many more details, but it's very brief, on your study period paper of my neighbor, somebody that I very much dealt with, the person in my life right now, is actually in Van Leer, in this little town of Van Leer, and lives in a camper, is basically homeless, and another just difficult situation to know how to handle. But what this exercise does is helps us to understand a little bit maybe why there's poverty, maybe why we have people like that around us. And I think sometimes we can almost have this arrogant view of ourselves that, well, if, or even foreign countries, I mean, if I was there, you know, I would be a good manager and I could make it. And oftentimes we do not take into account our good upbringing, being brought up in a church, your mom and dad weren't divorced, hopefully not. There's so many different things that make us, I almost hate to use the word financially successful, but it is what it is, that make us financially successful that we take for granted. So this exercise is going to vividly, hopefully, place something in your mind of how life is for some people.